Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
7:49 Central African time. Having a beautiful morning with you, and you. The tranquility is here, and people are, many of you are down the south coast, some of you driving, some of you got your apps on and listening to Marcus Sahaba, the voice of the Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah. God, really consciously connected, and someone that's connected with everything that's happening around and what's happening with the municipality and what's happening with Kafan Dafan is our very own Ahmed Parak. Councillor Ahmed Parak, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and tell me how you're doing this fine, beautiful morning, Ahmed.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, alan and salam to all our radio listeners. Alhamdulillah, what a beautiful Sunday morning Shabbat, bright and shining Sunday morning Shabbat.
Absolutely, Ahmed, bright and sparkly Sunday morning. Now, I'm going to share a secret with the people. When I was young, Ahmed used to go down to the soccer ground. He'll be running. He'll be, 10 rounds, 20 rounds. I say, hey, but Ahmed, you're overrunning. He said, hey, Shafat, I'm fit. I can do that. But tell them how many dips he used to do, Ahmed. On your thumbs, man. On your thumbs. Tell them how many dips he used to do. And we couldn't even match you, Ahmed.
So at that time, we were nice and healthy. We were eating the right foods. But alhamdulillah, we used to do our three or four rounds on the three grounds. And that is equivalent to a lot of mileage if you have to put. And then you're not only training, we're training like 5 days a week. So, that kept us going. And that's why we are fit today.
I'll tell you, Ahmed, we are very blessed. We had the three football grounds, then we had a cricket ground, then we had a tennis field, then we had, the beach, the ocean. We used to dive in the ocean and swim, then we had a big swim, half-size Olympic swimming pool. What we didn't have, then we had the civic hall, where we used to play our, table tennis, and then we used to play our badminton, and we used to play our carambol. We were very blessed, and then we had the masjid where the azan used to go. Whenever we played, we put everything down. Tell the people, Ahmed, how we used to run towards the mosque. The azan and the namaz was first and foremost. We had a very good upbringing, Ahmed.
Shabbat, when I was a referee, and when the game normally, 3 o'clock normally games start, and we normally finish at about 4:45. What happens sometime in winter, and the azan used to go like five minutes past five. And because of the first game, the 1 o'clock game ran late. So when I'm fasting I have to still, I was appointed for the referee for the game. So we stopped the game. I opened my fast and then I start the game again. So, we even had that privilege, and everybody knew. They would say, hey, what happened now? All of a sudden, we say, the water was there. We open our fast with one khajur, and we're back on the field again, and refereeing till the game is over. So this is the privilege we had.
Absolutely. Then the other memory, I remember there was this Ocean City, and there was Runyan Santos. Now, Runyan Santos used to have, our Salajis, our Padats, and we had Mufti's father, and, all these elderly gentlemen of our community, all used to stand behind the gold mouths, Runyan Santos, because it was like mostly our Muslim boys were playing there, the Pinos, and, everyone were there, the big size, they call them, and Abdul Khalik and all this. But it was, even AK, I remember the one Katani, he used to be playing for them too. But it was that Kubi, it was as if, the three quarters of the Musallis of the mosque used to be there for the 3 o'clock matches. And these were big matches. But alhamdulillah, it was the youngsters too kept themselves fit by going to the grounds. But that culture has died, it's gone, it's disappeared. It's something that we miss, Ahmed. Your thoughts?
Today, when we were there, when we originally started with Electra, then we changed to Springbok Beat Sports, then eventually Juventus. And Shafat, you'll know that at that time we had teams right from juvenile, junior, juvenile, senior. We had three senior clubs. We had every. And we also remember that at one stage, right up to junior level, and the senior team went right up to quarterfinals in the Clover Cup. So, when Clover Cup was big, Springbok had, we took the lead. In fact, in Chatsworth was very, very good because they also had facilities. But we wiped the whole this thing, junior, juvenile, and the calls, league calls, juvenile, all the every single cup we wiped it in there. We, every year we used to win the league in this under 8, under 12, under 14. You know, we wiped it. So you know the parents were with us. They used to bring the kids there for the training. They although used to go to madrasa, but after madrasa they used to make a plan to come down there for a few hours too, which they used to train. And then Saturday or Sunday when the game is on, they were there. You know, everybody was there with their baskets and everything. It was a Sunday that it was. You don't have to look to go to anywhere or out because Sunday was the outing for the soccer field.
Now, I will share a story with you, Ahmed. You know, our late Maulana Harun, Rahimullah, Allah fil yuskabar ud nur, the musallis of the mosque, we used to, after Zuhur on a Saturday, we used to go down to the ground, and, Mufti's cousin, Gora, and all, we all used to go down and play. I tell you, Maulana Harun was a brilliant right-winger. Yeah, right-winger. He used to cross the ball in perfectly, and he was so fit. And he used to always tell me, hey, Shaf, you remember those days? And I also, used to go fishing with Maulana Harun, a very keen fisherman. But, the soccer thing, it was something that kept us all together. And, as musallis, it kept us fit too. And it was good to see, alims of that caliber playing. And I don't know if you remember these brothers from Newcastle, Mamtazul Haq and Mansurul Haq. I mean, they were brilliant pool players, Ahmed. Do you recall?
I don't recall that, Shabbat. But, speaking about the late Maulana Harun, Allah give him Jannatul Firdaus. But he was a very good left-footed a player, yeah, and I remember he used to come there on a Saturday afternoon, and we used to have a game with him as well. And just before Asar, we were gone again. So that was the atmosphere we used to have in Spingo Beach. You can't take that away.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at the Kafan Dafan, what's the latest there, Ahmed?
Shabbat, at the moment, alhamdulillah, everything has been quiet. There's only one legislation that we're looking at it at the moment. And then once that comes through, then we will be much in a better position that Cape Town has, signed an agreement, which we have given it to our attorneys to look at it. And if that's going to be affecting us, then there's going to be a problem for later. But we are still studying that document. Once I get an update from our legal team, what is that MOU they have signed? And I'm not too pleased from what I have read that they are giving them a storage facility. Now, that storage facility is a very, very dangerous thing. We, unlike the non-Muslim, they have the storage facility for the bodies. And in Islam, we don't have the facilities, and we don't want the facilities because once you start accepting this facility at the mall, they will say, no, we put your body in the mortuary. Now we don't have staff. We'll only give you on Monday. Yes, the accident happened on a Friday. So that is a dangerous part because they now will say that you have signed this agreement here for the storage of the storage facility. Now why you are saying now we can't give you your body on a Monday? And that's one. The other issue is on a first come first serve basis. I'm not pleased with that because end of the day we have got a standing order where a Muslim, Hindu or a Jewish body comes in there because of the right of religion, right of culture, they have to do the post-mortem, providing it came at 6 in the morning and before 6 in the evening, they have to do it. They'll have to find the doctor to do it. So we have got this facility in place and I can't understand why would Cape Town go and sign this agreement. And then once my legal team has already studied it properly, and then we're going to be writing to Cape Town as well as the Department of Health to say that in terms of our religion, in terms of our Sharia law, that this is how we conduct our burial, and we do not want this, it should be cancelled. And if they don't cancel it, then obviously we'll bring an application and we'll get it cancelled.
Yeah, absolutely, Ahmed. And good, you hands on, and you're keeping your eyes on the whole thing. And Allah bless you for that. I see the newsman is sitting at his desk already. He's got about a minute more before he starts his news. But in that minute, we can talk about our Kabristan and about the Muslim burial bodies. How closely are they working, Ahmed?
You know, Alhamdulillah, you know, we're working very, very closely, you know, with the system that we have got in the country. And inshallah, you know, because now I'm in council, I just don't have the time to form up the national body, the Islamic Burial Council national body. We are already almost there now. We've got another three more provinces where they have to be signed up, and then we can roll up a national body in terms of our dafan kafan work, the procedures and everything. So I think that will make it easier instead of splinter provinces and they each one going and doing their own thing. I think it will, they reach from the same page, same line, and if there's any national issue, then we'll be able to take, it must come through national, the main body, the Islamic Burial Council national body, and they will do all the legal work and everything, instead of Cape Town is doing his own thing, Gauteng is doing his own thing, KZN is doing his own thing. So we give the government in all the province a complete mandate. This is how our structure works. We want our body on the same day as far as possible, and these are the ways we bury our deceased, and this is the format that we need to put into place, Shabbat.
Yes, sir, just gone 8:05 Central African time, and yes, Ahmed Farak, listening to the news, what caught your eyes, your ears, Ahmed?
Shabbat, the PE, where they're moving on to, where the cable theft, a huge problem there. Now they're moving on to diesel in trains and all that. So that is going to be a big plus factor for the communities, to use instead of taxis. And the cheapest mode of transport is trains at the moment. So therefore, I think that is going to be a big plus factor for the community. Even in KZN and in Vic, we're looking at it very, very, because all the cable theft, you'll see all the roads and some of the when you drive, on the side of the road, they're picking up the curbing there. They take the tires out there and they're starting to pull all the cable. So I think this is going to be history in the next couple of years. So once they get rid of all these cable theft issues, and I think we're heading in the right direction here at the moment.
You know, I'm glad you picked up on that, because once I was hearing the news, that was something that I focused on. Then I noticed that the taxi industry, I mean, you look at the price of fuel, and I don't know whether maybe that price of fuel could, you know, bring in the death knell for cars and that, because they'll be ushering in electric cars. As you said, the diesel came in for the trains and so forth. But I was thinking also, you know, when you look at the buses that have been put into places, but the buses get stoned every day, that it seems like someone doesn't want the bus system to work in Itikweni. They don't want the railway system to work. And could this be the taxi mafia doing that, Ahmed? Your thoughts?
Yes, Shafat, that is a major issue. In fact, I was surprised they had a march. The Kasatu had a march. Now, who is Kasatu? Kasatu is part of the government, and they marching to their own people. So I can't understand how that took place in the first place, because Kasatu is part of the government. So, and they are fighting for the fuel prices. So they should have been first consulting with the government and saying, you know what, these fuel prices are way, way out. Thousands of taxis have been affected. And they're talking about 2 rand increase on fares now from as of tomorrow. So I can't understand how that is possible when they're supposed to be consulting the government and the transport department to sort all these things out. And at the same token, they don't want the buses and they don't want the trains. So they want everything for themselves, and they want to, now they want to go on strike. How you can go on a strike when you're fighting your own government? So that doesn't make sense, you know. So I can't understand how this is possible.
Now, Ahmed, look at the taxis. I mean, you get some, you know, in mint condition, very. But most of the taxis that I see, perhaps in our area, in Isipingo, you know, they call it the Skoro Skoro. I mean, the bumper is nearly falling off. It's rickety. When they open the door is hanging with wires and so forth. How do they allow these types of taxis to drive on public roads? And you know, woe betide if these taxis get involved in an accident. There's absolutely no chance for the passengers, Ahmed.
Shafat, first, the government gave an incentive. All the scorers, all the old taxis should have been out of the roads by now. They gave him an incentive of 50,000 rands. You take 50,000 rand and you take your sarong and you go and put it in a scrap metal. That's it. But some of them took the 50 grand and they're still driving the same sarong and doing business with it. That's number one. Secondly, the whole taxi industry is not regularized in terms of they don't pay no taxes. There's no taxes have been paid. There's no accountability in terms of infrastructure. They're using our roads and all that. So all that, you know, they're supposed to be a levy for all that. You know, when you travel overseas, there's tax on fuel. There's tax on various things in government. Yeah, they, in this case, yeah, they are mafias to themselves, and there's no accountability. They got, you know, association got thousands of taxis, and one individual got 15, 20 taxis because it's easy money. There's no taxes to be paid. They're just filling fuel, and in no time, they buy one taxi, and then because of the business is so good, it finish up with anything from 15, 20 taxis in a year. This is good business because there's no problems in terms of declaring anything. So there should be, this taxi industry should be regularized because now you go, if you are a Spingo, from Spingo, and if you're going to another area, you got no chance. They'll shoot you, finish. The taxi is gone or the taxi is burnt. One of the two things will happen. So this is the problem that we are faced with.
No, absolutely, Ahmed. And then, you know, you got a problem with the Zulu royal household. There's still a contention that one faction wants to be the king and the other faction accusing Buthelezi of, interfering and so forth. How is the trouble that's taking place in the Zulu royal house? How is it impacting on KZN? And how does it impact with the running of the municipality? Does it have any repercussions, Ahmed?
See, at council, there's a special fund for them to for the maintenance of the for the Zulu king and everything. There is provision made for the Nkosis and all that. So as far as that is concerned, that is all in place. And you need that. And KZN is a unique province compared to all the other provinces in the country. And in KZN, you can't do anything. This is a Zulu land. You know, this is KZN is controlled by the Zulu. You can't bring a Khoisan to run this city or anything like that. So that's why when you find the election and all that, you'll always find where Zuma comes from is a Zulu. And, you know, up till now, although he's not in government, he's still calling the shots and all that. See, these things are happening at the moment. You can see that. So for us, yes, I think Buthelezi did the right call in trying to solve the problem. And in fact, they're still respecting him in this province. And he's got a lot of respect in the country. So I think the matter has been resolved at the moment. So I don't think that this thing is going to escalate more than what it was previously escalating.
Alhamdulillah, you know, the valid point is that it's Isi Zulu, the kingdom of the Zulu, and that's happening. And, you know, with all the problems that have been taking place with the Itikweni municipality and what's happening in KZN, it seems as if, you know, slowly but surely, Ahmed, you all are getting things together and perhaps we're climbing up we're climbing up the mountain and we're getting somewhere. Your thoughts?
You know, Shafat, I think this two floods that came through in April and May, you know, Allah knows best because the infrastructure in the city was really, really, it was outdated. And maybe because this flood came at the right time, Allah knows best, it took a few lives away too, and the infrastructure was really, really dead. Now, because of this flood has come, now the city has thought about this thing very, very clearly and saw this, you know what, they have to start doing something about it. And with this flood, now, you know, all our 13 reservoirs are getting upgraded. Our piping system that you are getting water. Now, they're not going to keep patching and all that. Eventually, you'll find the whole of where you're staying in Spingo Beach, they're going to come up, pick up all the streets in Spingo Beach and putting new pipes. And they've already started with that. And that is a big plus factor in terms of going forward from here in the next 3 years, I would say. It'll take them time. Yes, there is a shortage of money. We understand that. But the e-sponsors all over the world as well, they don't want the city and this country to go down the tubes. And they are coming to assist in terms of putting infrastructure in place. And I think we're in the right direction in terms of that is concerned. Our electricity is a problem that we know is going to be a long-drawn issue. There too, we're looking at 3 to 5 years. But all whatever we are saying and what we are seeing, it is taking care of it. So the new caliber of councillors has come into play on the 1st of November last year. They are making a difference. Even the opposition party and my party, Action SA, we're putting a lot of pressure on the government and to say that, you know what, the people out there, they want service delivery. And you have to. They are ratepayers, and they need service delivery. You can't just sit back and not give them delivery. So they are starting to get things in place. And, you know, there was no water in some of the places. The water has been reinstalled now. There is the Durban Heights Water Reservoir. It's going to be in the next 10 to 12 months. It will be a complete new system in place. For the next 5 years, you don't even have to add providing. They maintain. No use they're putting this piping system and the new electricity systems in place, and they do not service it. Everything needs service. Although you're going to put a new engine, you have to service that thing on a yearly basis. And if that can be done, I think we're in the right direction, Yeshua.
You know, Ahmed, I like when you talk, and a lot of ideas coming through my head, and I want to know, I'm going to ask you about two or three questions here. Number one is what type of pipes, they used previously, and what type of pipes they will be using now, and are they harnessing or are they embracing artificial intelligence, perhaps having sensors every 100 meters on these piping, so that the computer in your office will tell you, you know what, there's a problem coming up on that pipe, and the water flow is not right on the reservoir hills, reservoirs that you're looking, the water's getting there. Can they be, you know, AI friendly, or they can be AI regulated, so that everything is done beforehand? You'll know, yeah, this is happening, that's going to come through, and so forth, because we have to embrace artificial intelligence, and this is how the world is going through. I mean, cyber crime, and you got your plastic cars and so forth. It's all done with a blink of an eye. Your thoughts, Ahmed?
First and foremost, Shafat, you will see in your roads and all that, if, you know, they've been digging for the last 2 years or so, fiber has been already put in place there. You'll see fiber cables are there, and fiber is being outsourced, and it is a private company and all that. In fact, most of the areas, in terms of the knowledge I have in council, the fiber has already been installed. With fiber, you'll be able to use everything in one cable, so you're not going to have multiple cables running into your property and all that. That's number one. Secondly, that is going to be a big plus factor for us. In terms of putting, the old system was mainly the old asbestos concrete and asbestos pipes. They have changed it now to the more plastic pipes, where you're not going to get breakage in a hurry and all that. And there's a system they have put in place. When they're putting 10 kilometers, they have got record of the 10 kilometers in terms of, I don't know, the computer chip or whatever they're doing. They're going to be putting all that in place. Even in this new reservoirs that we are going to be putting. So everything is going to be more electronic. As you said, that, you know, we're moving to an electronic system in all over the world. So yet this thing is taking place. Unfortunately, our camera systems and all are not working at the moment. So that is a problem that they're looking at it at the moment.
Yeah, I'm looking at a question on the screen. It says, Assalamu alaikum. I want to remain anonymous. I am from overseas and are listening to the program. I really enjoy Ahmed Farooq. He's truly someone that I trust. Ahmed Farooq, I've got a problem. I have a whole block of flats, and I let my nephew run it for the past 10 years. Recently, he has filled up those flats with foreigners, and I'm afraid that there could be repercussions, because I believe most of the foreigners in South Africa are not documented. Ahmed, what can I do? I'm very disappointed with my nephew. Ahmed Farooq, how do you respond to our brother?
First and foremost, firstly, the flats the person from overseas should have never left it to his nephew here and put illegal tenants in the flat. That's number one. Number two, if they damage the flat too, you got no recourses in terms of getting those monies out of that foreign brother who is living in your flat. Thirdly, he can be charged up to the amount of 200,000 rand for harboring illegal immigrants in the country if they're not documented. That is what the law states. So my personal view is he needs to start working from flat to flat and start. See, most of them might have asylum papers. Some of them might have South African citizenship. They have applied or whatever it is. Check on that. And the ones that are not legally put in their flat, they need to be removed from there. And then furthermore, there must be a proper lease put in place there and a damage deposit. If anything happens to that flat, at least they got a recourse of 1 month of damage deposit. They can fall back and get the flat back into trim condition.
Looking at a message from Kasim, he says, "Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed Tarak. You've been very helpful. My cousins and a few of my relatives have received a positive feedback from you, and bless you for that." He says, "My problem is that I'm enjoying myself presently with the low bills that I'm getting from Itikweni. When will they start slapping us with higher figures? I'm frightened for that." How do you respond to Kasim? He's frightened for the big bills coming through very soon, Ahmed.
Shafat, firstly, you must make sure that he's getting low bills at the moment. When the high bill comes, then you need to deal with that matter. In fact, for now, he must make sugar and just sit down with these low bills. If the high bills come, then you will do a comparison. He can call us and maybe you can help him to do a comparison in terms of what the usage was now and what the usage is then. So then we'll be able to help him.
Brother from Tonga says, "Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed Parak. Still things are not so good in our place. Why don't you come and address us one of the days? You'll be like a breath of fresh air, because many hot air people have come and promised us, but nothing is really happening. We're still in Sakrat mode." Hey, that's a good term, Sakrat mode there, Ahmed, in Tonga.
Shafat, for the brother in the Tonga, yes, I was there once. The DM, the deputy mayor, is handling, he's in charge of infrastructure. We made ourselves very, very clear there in Tonga with the community there that is not going to be a quick fix for Tonga. It's going to take a year, and that whole system has to be completely renewed, and that's what's going to be happening. And therefore, give up the givers, and some private donors have already started putting boreholes there. So there is water tankers there, there is boreholes there. So the matter is not, we're not out of the woods yet, but it's taking, the contractor is on site already. That I'm 100% sure of, because the contract has been given to completely refix the whole pump house, fix the infrastructure there. So in fact, whatever happened for Tonga, they're going to suffer for about a year from now. But long term, they will be much happier, better. They have a better infrastructure. They will have cleaner water, because the purifying system they're going to be putting there, the state-of-the-art system they're putting there. And in fact, you will be much better off.
Yasin says, "Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed. Talking about boreholes, it seems like everywhere they're drilling for boreholes. In my neighbors have been drilling there, and I'm afraid in our area, are they taking out so much of water, and what are the damages that borehole drilling can do? Because my building is also cracking from one end. Who do I sue, Ahmed Parak?"
First and foremost, the most important thing, even if you drill a borehole, you need to get a permit. So if that person, you know what they are doing at the moment, because that brother said we in Sakrat mode, we in Tegweni are in Sakrat mode in terms of delivering water to the community, and because of the infrastructure is damaged so badly. So the law states very, very clearly, in the Act states very, very clearly, that whenever you're doing a borehole, you need to apply by the city, by the municipality, to get a permit that you are drilling borehole, because there's a special levy for borehole, because you are below that 30 meters or 50 meters, you're going to get the water. That water doesn't belong to you. That water belongs to the city. So therefore, you need a permit for that. But we, what we have done in a council, we have, you know, we just left it at this stage here. We're not enforcing the law because of the crisis we are in. But the law says very, very clear, you need to get a permit. So that permit actually makes provision for the brother, what he said. If they're drilling like 30, 40 meters and it's very, very close to your property, it can affect in terms of your foundation or anything, then you have got a recourse.
So if the, you know, I believe when the borehole is dug, I mean, that thing is hitting all the time, you know, you have got clang, clang, clang. And Yasin makes a point. He says his walls are cracking. So can he approach his neighbors and say, you know what, you're causing damage here. Can you fix my cracks, sir? Ahmed, can he do that?
He can do that. That's what I said. You know, if he needs to be, firstly, he needs to get his architect. His architect will advise him. By virtue of digging, the neighbor is putting a borehole, it can do damages to his property, because that normally happens. When rain comes in, and there's a lot of rain, so obviously the water has to be seeped into the ground, and sometimes it will have some effect in his property, but the architect is the right guy, will be able to guide him on that issue.
Ahmed, you tickle my brains here. You talk about the borehole. You said you have to get permits and all those things. Now, what happens in normal circumstances? You have to pay like a rental to the municipality for having a borehole in your area, and how much a month?
There's a special tariff in that. I don't have it off me now. I don't have all my books here. It's at the office. But there's a special tariff. That's why they say you need to get a permit. So you have to apply to the city to get a permit that you are pulling the water out from the ground. And this is, they don't mind. The issue is not that you mustn't do that. But there's a act in place, because as the brother also said, that you can't dig it. You know, although you might find it at your boundary, and you might affect the retaining wall of your neighbor. So that might be a problem. Therefore, sometimes they even ask you where it is, you need to draw a plan and give it to them, because you want to get these problems like that time to time. So that is the reason. So at the moment, we're not being hard and fast in terms of the enforcement at the moment. We're saying, okay, because of the shortage, you are prepared to go put a borehole and assist the community and yourself. We are allowing it. But when the everything settles in a year or so, we're going to everyone. You put a ball with your certificate, apply, and you need to get compliant. That's what is going to happen.
Yeah, Ahmed. Hey, you don't have. Hey, how did you put the borehole? Yeah, get your certificate. Yeah. Oh, you don't get it. All right, I'll give you $100,000 fine. Yeah. You. Hey, Ahmed, then what happens? You know, in Afrikaans, they say the popular dance. So you rather, I mean, you're giving brilliant advice here, Ahmed. Brilliant advice indeed. Then moving on, Ahmed, I'm thinking also about people have dug boreholes, but the water has run dry. And then you said, hey, where's your certificate? There's a rental, but the water is not there. What happens then, Ahmed?
Then you go back to the council, you send them a letter that the water has dried up completely, so that they will cancel it completely. You don't even have to pay them. But then you are liable to close that hole because there's no water. They senseless having a borehole and a pump and everything else. You need to, the cost is yours. It's not the council's cost or anything like that. So that's where it comes.
I tell you, Ahmed, you and I, how come we got everything covered? Talk to me, Ahmed. How come we got everything covered? We give them the answers before they ask us sometimes.
No, Alhamdulillah. Allah has blessed us. In fact, you know what? The next program we must do in Shabbat is, I'm going to send you some literature. You must read the climate change. And if you study that, then we'll do it about 2 weeks later, after Bakri, and look at the climate change in terms of 3.7 million people in this city alone, of which might be about 600,000-700,000 Muslims in this province as well, in the city. So read all that and you'll see the notion how we're putting this climate change and what it does in terms of the seabed is rising, the water level is rising, the winter has been changed from like we used to have November, June and July. Now it's gone to later part of the year. All this, if you read this thing, I've got a beautiful book that I went to a seminar during the week. And I've got a copy for you as well. I'll send it through to you. You read that, I think, and then you can ask me questions on those there, and then we'll be able to assist the community as well.
Well, you heard that, people. You got any questions on climate change? I'm telling the listeners now, Ahmed. You send it to me, and I will post this to Ahmed Parag there. Yeah, Ahmed, there was this other gardener telling me the other day. He said, you know, Shafat, it's that time of the season where the snake should be hiding. But he says it's maybe because of climate change, the green mambas are still around. They're walking on the road. I mean, they're slithering down the road and all that. And perhaps you're onto something. I tell you, Ahmed, brilliant talking to you as usual. Perhaps your parting words this morning?
Shafat, my one ride today is that, next week, Sunday, inshallah, I think we will be celebrating our Eid. We'll be sacrificing the bull, sheep, whatever cattle we're going to be doing. There's a regulation in terms of Section 128 Act 2004, Section 128 2B and A. So that way we need to make sure that the community, whoever is slaughtering, get themselves permits from the city, from the go on to Google, to Durban City Health, they will be able to issue a permit. So I think you'd rather be compliant than non-compliant. And in fact, what will happen is when you got a neighbor and he's against you in any way, he will phone the Department of Health, and there and then they will come out and see the way how we're doing and everything. So we don't need that issues or anything like that. I think we rather go onto the route of get ourselves compliant. It'll make it much easier. There's no charge, I think, to it. You can do it on the system where you are. And in some cases, they might come and visit the place because maybe you're doing 30 or 100 or 200 sheep or whatever it is. I'd rather you get compliant because you never know your neighbor or somebody that don't like you in your area or anything have complained to the department, and they are compelled to send the inspectors there to come and see how you're doing and all that. So I think, to make it easier for everyone for next week where we'll be able to slaughter our sheep in peace, go and get the permit. I think that is the best information I can give you. I am in council. If anybody needs assistance, we can show them the rope, how to go and do it, and we can even assist them. I've got an office. I've got a full-time PA for my legal work in terms of council work and everything. They'll be able to assist them.
JazakAllah khair, Ahmed. Absolutely, mashallah, morning with you. You have a blessed day ahead. Inshallah, we'll talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Yes, our Ahmed Parak, Councilor Ahmed Parak, keeping us up to speed.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.